Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Oh, we got an intruder alert, all right. But it's going to be just fine. Good evening and welcome to Madame Perry's Salon, has been described by many guests as looking like the inside of Jeannie's bottle, although it's, I don't think Jeannie ever had to worry about thriller suspense writers Rick Cornell and Brett Wright leaving burritos in the cushions, but we got all that taken care of and cleaned out, and it's all nice. Just want to say thank you so much for listening. I, of course, am your host and cruise director, Madame Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, or Jennifer Maudette Perry to my mod friends. And if you're listening live tonight on Blog Talk Radio, well, you see that little pink rectangle there that says if you're looking at some kind of a screen for your internet or iPad or laptop, it says follow. Please click follow, or at least follow us on iTunes or Stitcher, because the more followers I have, then the more I can get great guests like I've been having, I've got coming up, and like the guest I have tonight that I'm very excited about. Also, it helps me get sponsors to stay on the air. Yay! We've had so much fun lately. And by the way, if you remember, a couple months ago, we had a guy on, Frank DeVille Greenfield. Frank's a musician. He's done a lot of writing and production for Usher, Timbaland, and Beyonce. And right now he's out on tour with the Gap Band playing guitar. And so if the Gap Band comes around, go see them. They're always good. And also definitely want to see DeVille. If you see him, tell him you heard him on Madame Perry's Salon. Also, let's see, who else have we had? Last night we had Kate Moore, the UK best-selling author, talking about her new book, The Radium Girls, and that's a nonfiction book about a true story. Some people don't know it, that started in happened in the U.S. almost 100 years ago. Some young women that worked in the factory painting radium on dials for watches and dials for equipment on things used for the military in World War I, who became poisoned by the radium and had horrible, horrible time trying to get some kind of help, some medical help, and get some kind of they just got screwed every way possible. But and also next week we've got Jay Smith on Tuesday. We've got Randy Ross with his new book, God Bless Cambodia. 2 weeks later, M. William Phelps. You know I'm a true crime fan, and so M. William Phelps is going to be here talking about his newest book, he's gotten two out in the last 6 months, and I've read them both. One, Don't Tell a Soul, and the other one, I can't think of the name, but they're good. So tonight's guest. Oh, and for last night, anyone that called in to get that entered to win the book, The Radium Girls, we should have the winner announced by tomorrow, and I'll put it up on Facebook. Now, tonight's guest, I am so excited because he's what they call a multi-hyphen person, a slasher, as they say, this slash that. He's a poet, critic, performer, workshop facilitator. He co-hosts at Got Poetry Live and the Cantab Lounge, both in Massachusetts. But he lives in, I don't know if I should say where he lives. I know I'm pretty funny about where I live. But that's because I'm a pervert magnet. He's probably not. But he's performed in countless poetry open mics and festivals, and I just think he's fascinating. So please welcome here to Madame Perry's Salon, Rick McIntyre. Rick, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am delighted to have you. I'm so happy that you accepted. And also, my our friend Duffy Odom is here in the studio with us. Duffy, hi.
Hi, you know me. I'm Duffy Odom.
Hey.
Hello, Rick.
I don't know if Rick knows you or not.
Hi.
Rick, I've been reading your poetry, and I'm flabbergasted. You are so fantastic. It's such a relief to read somebody that doesn't sound like I'm reading a classified ad. actually writing true poetry in this day and time. I want to get all your books and everything that you published in a magazine or publication, and I have more questions than we have time for.
Okay.
So thanks. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much for being here.
Don't leave us.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't leave us now, though, Rick. Don't let us overwhelm you, okay?
No, I'm still here.
And I've got to. Okay. I don't know where to begin with you. I feel like this is kind of going to be sort of an organic conversation, as they say now. But I will have to say, a couple of my favorite poems, if I may mention, are, because I don't know, you are going to read for us tonight. I don't know what you have selected to read, but I know it's going to be perfect. But I will say two of my favorites are, one is The Gray Alphabet. Another is The Awful Potential.
I
did not realize until I read that, somebody said that sometimes you write from the point of view of a fictional character, like Godzilla or Dracula.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing, I guess they're called persona poems, technically. But especially
so what
if I,
kind
you
of
know,
poems? What
it's
kind
called
of poems,
persona.
Rick? Oh, persona poems. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. You know, you get to get inside of, someone else's head. And especially if I can find, you know, an angle that has been underexplored, then, you know, it's a lot of fun.
And also there's another one that's very dear to me. And I think it has to do with female who's very important in your life.
I'm sorry, say that again.
It's called Clown. A poem that I believe is about a very special lady in your life. And it's called Clown College Homeschooled.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Well, that's about your daughter, Autumn.
That is for my daughter. I've written a number of poems across the years for my kids.
Madam Perry,
yes.
I'm telling you, there's a poem. I've read several poems, and one that stuck with me. I may even want to read it myself on the air. What is missing in thin air is just made me sweat. The phrases are unbelievable, it moves like a river. It just goes and goes. I love the way that you, I love the progression of imagery and mixed, I guess they're like mixed metaphors and the way they all fit together and then come to an end or don't. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, thanks. From the description, I feel like I want to read this guy's stuff too.
Yeah, I started reading Duffy's poems a long time ago, but I don't want to say how long. But want to call in to Madame Perry's Salon and talk to Rick McIntyre or us, the number is 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. If you listen, you already, should already have it in your phone because you know I have the most fantastic, fascinating people here. And last night we had a gave away a book, Kate Moore's publisher gave away a copy of her new book. I didn't ask Rick about giving anything away, but if we don't have anything, I might give away a date with Rick McIntyre and a date with Jeffy Odom.
I tell you what, I'll date anybody for a copy of one of Rick's books. Sure. In a
so,
second.
Yes.
Rick, do you feel, I want to ask questions about you, and but what would you feel like going ahead and reading for us right now? Reading something?
Sure.
Anything you
sure.
Choose?
I'll start off with a poem that the title is almost as long as the poem, but this is called For the Lovers That Waited in Vain for Me to Return from the Sea. I am sorry you fell in love with someone who wasn't there most of the time. Buried too deep in myself, needing substance to bring me back up to human. Those bad habits meant more than you did every time the choice arose. You told me you loved me. I gave you an excuse and a mask I assured you was really me. I was never in those photographs. Just something you think looked like me, sounded like me, took to the drink whenever it was offered, and also took to the drink when it wasn't. Drowning in escape that was doomed every time I looked deep in a mirror. I still drowned. I just didn't go anywhere.
You gotta say, "Hard, man." That's my third marriage in a nutshell.
Yeah, I thought I'd start off with the dismal stuff and maybe work some comedy or hope.
Well, it's
later.
Not dismal anymore. I can.
Well, I wanted to write a poem that, you know, so often when we write poems, we're the hero of the poem, or at least, you know, the protagonist, and I wanted to write a poem that, you know, did not compliment me, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been pretty open in my life and in Facebook posts and so also in poetry about, you know, being used to being addicted to alcohol and dealing with emotional health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to be, I try to represent that stuff because, you know, I want people to kind of get over the shame of talking about things like depression, anxiety, and, you know, living in a world for whom, why don't you just try being happy? It does not work, you know. if we
right.
could be happy, we wouldn't be like this. And, you know,
together.
So I try to be an advocate. For people getting recovery either way.
Do you find after you've written something like that, and I'm just talking about the kinds of poems you're talking about now, where you think you're being too confessional, you know, that the confessional poetry after a while, just like any kind of genre, after it's become passé, critics start railing against it. You know, like Berryman, John Berryman, Ann Sexton, Sylvia Plath, people that, and there's nothing wrong with these poets. I mean, there was,
no.
Obviously was something
John
wrong with them.
Ann Sexton was my gateway poet.
Your what?
My gateway poet. I read
gateway
her,
poet?
And that led to the world of poetry.
Who? Which one?
Ann Sexton's book, The Awful Road Towards
Sexton.
God.
Oh yeah, Ann Sexton. I was so obsessed with Ann Sexton, And she wrote Live, and I said, yes, Ann, that's it. And everything, that struggle, and every poem sounded like she was going to live that thing out. And then all of a sudden, she was gone, and I thought, what the, what were you thinking? And I had to remember, she's not doing any of this for me. She learned, in fact, she didn't even start it to write poetry. She was talking to Robert Lowell, and he said, well, why don't you write it down, you know? She seemed to see both sides of it. You know, she could rail against her doctors, against the people that were keeping her, and talk about her family and be so open about it. So it was. She wasn't necessarily doing it to heal. She was doing it to express herself, whether it was anger or it was love or it was confusion or whatever it was. And I never saw anything wrong with it. And I had to figure out how to understand why she would take that step. And so many of them did. A lot of them did.
Part of it is overcoming the shame of having depression or alcohol or drug problem.
Yeah.
I know when I consider writing things that are very self-confessional, and not everything is. I mean, there's an assumption that if a poet gets up on stage and reads a poem, they're talking about their life. And, you know, I generally give a, you know, notice before doing a persona poem that, you know, in the case of The Awful Potential that Madame Perry mentioned earlier, you know, I am in fact not a 8 foot tall green human stitched together from pieces of the dead and brought back to life through lightning. Just in case, you know, there's any confusion in the audience. So, but yeah, I mean, I've done some poems and had people go, wow, so that really happened to you? And I'm like, you know, that was a poem about somebody else. I mean,
about something. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't there when I wrote it, so I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I knew this comedian, and I wish I knew where he is now. He was, I think a lot of people thought of him as the HIV poet, because he was very open about having AIDS, and a lot of people were uncomfortable listening to him talk about this, but he would break the ice by saying, you don't want to judge me. I could cut a vein right now and take out this entire front row. and people would laugh, and they'd say, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Keep going. And that's sort of what we all do if we're writers and we stand up in front of people and read these things. You're saying, hey, this is my life. It may not be about me. It may not be about anybody. Just like a fictional character, or it may be completely me. But whatever it is, I'm bleeding for you. You know, you have to understand it's not a sacrifice for me, but it's truly I'm standing here naked in front of you people, and so listen up, you know.
Yeah.
Try to take it for what it is, and not just a bunch of gobbledygook. It's not Harry Potter, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And not all your stuff is like that. A lot of it, some of your stuff is completely different. I'm curious about this. What is superhero poetry, and what does that have to do with anything?
Oh, it was a project my ex-wife and I did, which was to put together a collection, an anthology of poems written about comic book characters, comic books in general, anything around that idea. People could take it, you know, whichever way they wanted to. A lot of people did persona poems. Some people did, you know, stories about when they were reading comics. You know, people kind of went in the direction they wanted to go with it. Years later, Right Bloody Press decided to do an anthology in the same vein, and I got to be one of the co-editors for that. But, you know, just like any other genre poetry, it's poems in and around a central idea.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm seeing Clark Kent at a bar saying, nobody understands me.
Yeah, well, again, with persona poems, the fun is getting into someone else's head and taking them in a direction you've not seen before, or you know, somewhere I have an Aquaman poem that I wrote just because I was so tired of people treating him kind of like a joke character.
Uh-huh.
I wrote this very menacing Aquaman poem. But
why you, I oughta.
Yeah.
I'm
a lot, you know,
Aquaman,
a lot of the poems are that kind of naked confessional. The next one I was going to read is certainly that. It's a new poem from a writing prompt by an amazing writer named Marty McConnell. And this is simply called Room. Boston, 1985. Overlooking the pike across from the south end side, a view complete with "Hi, Rick" spray painted on the wall by a friend trying to lift me from depression. This was the living room. My room was in back, overlooking lush green in the thin alley below my window. But I wanted to die in either room, so the difference is mostly rhetorical. Whom it was that used to love me in these rooms was gone, leaving a dozen ghosts in the turbulence. Phantom of passion, brown-eyed woman, southern bellissima, lover I was engaged to, lover dispelled, the empty space who used to be her, and other names I only groan aloud when dreams force me to tell the truth. The only room I love is the memory of the rooms when she was in them. This room is a seashell up against my ear. All I hear is the sound of tides pulling two people apart, the echo of one person leaving the other high and dry, shipwrecked on themselves, the never-to-be reception party lost in sinking seas after love fathom. Still, I didn't ever want to leave here. The whole city was further haunted by places we had been together, love made under footbridges and willow trees, on the roof of my building in daylight, full view of office buildings around us. I don't want to chase after any ghosts when I can catch them by doing nothing and standing still. This room wants to kill me with the weight between its floor of wood and sorrow and the ceiling that let my dreams pass through. I can't see through the windows. Every glance just reflects that room, me standing in the middle asking, what the fuck happened to us in so many distraught, soundless ways? I've become a ghost in my own memory. I inhabit a room only I can remember. It was perfect. It tells me stay as long as I like. I can't breathe when I'm standing here. I grab what few things remind me of her that don't hurt me to carry, which is to say, I leave the room empty-handed. I lock the door. I wish I was there. I never left. that was that one.
Wow. And when did you write this one, Rick?
That was written a couple months ago.
A
couple months ago, but and I'm almost ashamed to say this. The last time I was on your show and I heard that poem about seeing a ghost while driving in Western Massachusetts, it's about the same woman. And it just occurred to me that we broke up, you know, 30 years ago. And I am still, you know, find myself writing about it from time to time. So, why do poets get obsessed over stuff?
Yeah.
Rick, do you know David Hurley?
I'm sorry?
Do you know David Hurley? He's a poet and author, but he has a magazine, Subtlety and Bookalage. And he's listening, and right now he said, P.S., and he quotes, "This room wants to kill me." It's a priceless line.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
But that was a result of her, you know, wonderful prompt, which was, you know, pick a room that you're in or, you know, some room. And then the rest of the prompt is just asking you questions, often kind of sensory questions. You know, what does the room smell like? What does the room sound like? What's the light in the room? And, you know, you guide the poem by the prompts, or, you know, if they don't work for you, you skip one and go to the next. And that was a poem I came up with out of it.
Do you edit as you write, or do you
scribble it all down as I write? Uh-huh. I don't really write by hand much because of some nerve issues. I get hand cramps very easily.
I can't do it either anymore.
Nicer to it's easier to you know, to type it out, but I'll edit things endlessly. I've even been known to edit a poem while in the middle of performing it because a better line just occurred to me.
I've heard poets
work it into the poem and keep on going.
I've heard poets, even W.H. Auden, when I heard him read and I was reading along with some of them, I found out that entire lines would change, and I wouldn't know if he was doing it right now or if there was an edited edition that we don't know about or what. But yeah, I can see that happening.
Some poets work on a poem until they think it's done, and then for them it's done. I constantly update older poems because, you know, I look at them and I know what I was trying to get at, but I didn't have the tools, I didn't have the language and the experience to, you know, do the idea justice. So I'll rewrite them. And if they become something, you know, significantly better, then I will share them. Otherwise, you know, it's an exercise in trying to always push oneself a little further. And I'm never done with poems, I swear to God.
I see. Well, I used to publish, but I was quite young. It was my first couple of years in college, and the first first groups of poems that were accepted and published were, some of them were written when I was 15 and 16 years old. You know, I think of myself as much wiser then. And then I got into acting, and there's a part of the creative process that I used in acting that was similar to what I did with poetry, when it's like you, I would do a part and you do the production, and then the production is over and you forget about it. And you go to an audition and you forget about it. And then you get the part, you do it, and then I forget about it. And when I'd write a poem, I would pretty much put it away. I would edit it as I go along and stick with it until I knew it was done, and then never look at it again. Or if I do, I might change a word or two or a phrase, or I might say this doesn't make sense. But if I can't, if I'm on that roll and it doesn't happen, I abandon it and say maybe another day I'll come back to it. But it's hard for me, even when I, it may be a slight touch of attention deficit or something, because, you know, I'll read a book and the book is over. You know, I don't go back to it. I put it on a shelf. I never touch it again. And but I was going to say that there's a and everybody does it different. But I have a thing that I believe in. I don't preach anything to anyone. In fact, I would advise people not to do anything the way I do it. But there's a thing about synchronicity and about something providential about myths and symbols. You were talking about following, what was it you said? It was something about the flow of the thing. You take the prompts. You were talking about prompts.
Right,
and following those prompts. And I do that.
I mean,
it's been so long since I've been able to act or write or anything, but just recently, especially since Madame Perry has gotten my creative juices flowing again after many, many years, suddenly things are happening. I'm reading poetry that I actually like. I like A. E. Stallings. That's from that's from down this way. I read her and liked her and didn't even know that she was born down the street from places I used to live. And
oh wow!
And then and like I found you. That something providential about that. I have a dear friend that I knew all those years ago when I was publishing, and he just recently dug up some boxes that were in his attic, and he found photographs of us rehearsing songs in plays that we were doing, and he also had a collection of 33 poems that I had written back then that I have not seen since then.
Wow.
And this just happened a few days ago. And this role is happening, so that, and being able to open up and you know, I don't want to use any religious words, but I'm sort of led to things that are particularly touching to me. And when I read your poetry, I you know, people always say, I feel like you were talking to me. Well, I do. When I read What is Missing in Thin Air, and you talk about loss, I came down here with no creative outlet at all to South Georgia. I was an actor in Atlanta for 50 years, and I had hundreds of friends, and I had fans. I could walk down the street, see somebody I knew or somebody that knew somebody that I knew. And down here, in 16 years, I made two friends, and they're not really, really close friends. And then people in my family started dying off. The entire household that I grew up with, I saw them passing away one at a time. A couple of years would go by, and another one would be gone. Oh, my God, there's a plane crash, and another one, and another one. And then last January, my mother, that I was down here as caregiver, that's why I was down here, and I was full-time caregiver for her for 16 years. When she died, it was like loss burst into my house and grabbed me by the throat and threw me down and said, you are never going to know why. For your entire life, this is going to be a mystery to you, why this is happening to you. And I read that. I read What is Missing in Thin Air, where you're talking about loss with the same thing. There's no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reaction like an allergy. I could feel you breathless in it. These things, and I keep thinking, is he talking to me? Is there anybody else in the world sitting down reading this besides me? I don't know. It's just so, you have a way of getting so personal without being invasive.
Well, I appreciate that.
Or without being self-consumed, which is a problem with.
Well, I don't share all the self-consumed poetry, you know.
I realize that.
Yeah.
You know, I did a reading years ago with James Dickey, and I knew I got to know him kind of well, and I knew from the second that I first met him that this is not going to be a nice guy. You know, I'm going to have to watch his motives and mm-hmm. why is he putting me under his wing. You know, I never exactly trusted it. And he would get up and read Looking for the Buckhead Boys, and he'd get to that line where he goes in the bathroom and he pulls down his pants and takes a shit. And people laugh, and he stops, and he laughs, and it's like, ha, ha, ha. And I knew that 90% of that crowd, as good a poet as he may have been, are going home thinking, oh, he's that poet that said shit on the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's all they're going to remember.
That's
you know?
Past the line I would go,
yeah,
but.
Yeah, you know.
Pardon me, guys. I got a butt in here because I also have a comment from a question. The question I did not see earlier. There was a question from David Hurley before that comment. And also our friend, Rick McIntyre, my BFF, and the host of the podcast Everything Relationships, Kenya Colbert is in the house.
Hey, Kenya.
Hi, Duffy. Hi, Rick. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Kenya. Getting Rick fantastic.
Okay, we got so. Yeah.
So what was the question?
So David, here's David Hurley's question, and I have a note here from David Hurley, and he writes. Let me get back over there. I'm gonna mute you just a second, Duffy, so I can just hear it. He says, "Comic book poetry. I need to read your and Melissa Guillo's Look Up in the Sky book. Do you have any pieces from that book or about superheroes that you can read now on the show?"
Actually, I could. Hold on a second. I will plug the anthology I'm going to read with, because I don't have a copy of the other one with me at the moment. Is Multiverse. That's the anthology I told you that earlier about that came out from Right Bloody Press, and that has poets from Jeff Kagan Trencher to Patricia Smith and I'm just trying to find where my poem is. Oh, no, that's my foreword. while I'm looking for it, why don't I read this poem that I wanted to read just because it's another one from a writing prompt and just one that I was very pleased with and comes about as close to I got it in one draft as possible to me. I did change a few things, but mostly it's how it flowed out of my brain, which happens very rarely. The prompt was, and this is from my friend William James up in Manchester, New Hampshire. You are an attendee at the annual convention of lesser gods. You meet a deity whose last worshiper died this last year. Share the conversation you have. Well, I didn't really go with the conversation route, but this is what I wrote. And it's called The God of the Forgotten God. When entities have become forgotten, become lost and unfriended, they come to me. In the days before, this was something of a certainty, and now I find myself unsurprised in whole new ways. If you are going to choose only one belief about God, choose this. Not a single human knows anything. No one has ever begotten an accurate description. They get it wrong. Always some fabric unraveling inconsistency rises, and their well-rounded, enriched religion is revealed for what it is, a child's drawing of the indescribable, usually superheroes of some kind who are better and kinder or not. Some are just bigger, and all children know this. The biggers can push around the small of them because they can. Of course they worship that. Gods in heaven don't exist unless they do, and that's as accurate as any anthology or liturgy gets. So what happens to the discarded works of men? Where do old gods go to die of quiet isolation? They come to me, Preservatus, the God of the Forgotten God. They come because I remember their names when names die, remember their high holy days, remember the things they liked sacrifice, the essence that a litany of voices is crucial to maintain. I mean, I bring them meals and sing songs only they and I still remember the words to for as long as they can yet hold their shape. Afterwards, I put them to sleep in grounds beyond the reach of dream or supplication, a place where the gods are safe from men. Throw a prayer into the air. See if someone's listening there. Count to one starting at 10. See if anyone's listening then. And interestingly enough, that mentioned the term superhero, and I had totally forgotten about that. So, you know, it's kind of a twofer.
Okay. Well, you know, David says, thank you. So,
oh, lovely. Good, because I'm just not finding the other thing. Is there time for one more poem?
You know what? For you there is, yeah, because...
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, one more thing. That before you go, because Rick, we are holding. Don't worry about the voice that said 90 seconds is off. We've got time for one more Rick McIntyre poem. Don't worry. We'll add time. But before we go, let people know how to find you, how to find your books, how to find you, your personal appearances, where you're reading.
I have a author page on Facebook called The Rick. Theryk, and it's you know, anyone can see that on Facebook. It's a public page, and I can be messaged there. I'm going to have somebody assist me because I'm old and I'm afraid of the internet to set up a PayPal link to my blog so I can, you know, list books that I have available there. So that's all in the works. But if people, you know, reach out to be my message, you know, we can do something that way. Anyway, this is for you, Jennifer. This is the poem I wrote. One of the first poems I wrote from a series of poems based on Universal Studios monsters, you know, the big ones. And it's also something I took away from when I read the original Mary Shelley novel was, you know, I didn't take it as a monster story. I took it as what happens when, you know, parents reject their children after telling them they are monsters. You know, what else is left to them but often become that monster? So this is called The Awful Potential. Don't tell me the sins of the father will be visited on the son. I know this already. It is my story, full of hatred and the frightened. Have they spoken of my awful potential? And did they call me Frankenstein's monster? They are liars. They lie. My name is Adam, and I know I am not lovable. I am too unsettling to gaze upon. My skin is not like yours of the living, and I'm a stitched puzzle to God. My flat skull, they say, is because God looked down at me and said, man is capable of both right and wrong, but this is a sin so original in its arrogance, there was no plan for its punishment. This, God said, is not mine. Well, let God hate me then. I never asked to be born. But assembled into this world, all I wanted were the same answers, same questions as anyone. Who am I? Why am I here? I was no miracle of motherless birth. I was a mistake, stolen into being, lightning in my blood. My father was hailed the modern Prometheus, but look deep into the myth. Prometheus was a thief. Did by my father, by God, I wandered the night and the deep forest. No one would believe me if I told them about the young girl I found kneeling in the field and picking flowers. My heart was moved. I did not know I had one. Absolutely unafraid, she smiled at me, and all my strength went weak before her. We threw flowers in the stream, and we laughed as they swirled, until someone in her family screamed, and out came the villagers, every torch and pitchfork one of them, all howling of my awful potential, of these arms that could break them, a body that doesn't bleed, a creature that fears nothing except for fire. So it was behind fire they found their courage, and as they drove me back, I stared them down, and I saw the truth in their eyes. When they dream, it is of miracles and immortality. But awake, they are the sons of Cain, and they kill because that is what they do. They even murder their own dreams. But then these are people who worship a god who allowed his own son to die horribly just to prove a point. A god that named every angel he watched burn. In great irony, the villagers drove me back home to my father's castle, where the very shape of his sins revisiting come back as my hand at his throat. And I looked at the villagers, all torches and holy worship of hate. And I looked at my father and all that came from his science and mad resolve. And I look straight into the eyes of God. I know there is an awful potential behind all of this, but it is not in me.
You stole my heart, Rick. You have no idea. You just have no
Aw, thanks.
Thank you so much for reading that. It just, yeah, it just speaks it all the way in. I am so glad that you're so generous with your time for me here tonight to share this.
Oh, I had a great time.
And of course, oh, good. Well, you'll come back?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yay.
Yeah, we need more poetry on here. And you know what, folks? I will be also have on all of my information on my public, all of my social media, Rick's the address for Rick's page at the Rick on Facebook in case you don't find it, and that's RYK. You should probably know. And also on you're on Twitter, Rick. Can they find you there?
I am, but I forget my handle. I just haven't.
Well, that does
just
do
behind
no
the
good.
Learning curve here.
It's
okay,
at.
All right. Oh,
at.
We have one more from David Hurley. He, after that, he
okay.
Gave me the big smiley face emoji, and he said, "Good peace." Yeah, David. I think so
thanks.
Too. Like I said, it really grabbed my heart and just moved in there. So moved in my heart. So thanks, David Hurley, for joining us. Thanks, Kenya. Thanks, Duffy Odom, and for everybody listening at home. And Rick McIntyre, we think you're fantastic, and stay. Visit Madame Perry Salon anytime, okay?
I will. You be well. Bye bye.
Oh, I will. Hey,
bye,
hey,
Rick.
One more thing. You gotta hear the.
Oh yeah.
Here's my house. Everybody's got to swing.